You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Richard Boxall.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Guido Migliozzi showed nerves of steel to claim the magical Kenya Open presented by ABSA.
Incredible. First win on European Tour. I mean, I think the key this tournament has been calm and keep going shot by shot and stay patient.
The Italian held off the challenge of three players, including last week's winner, Justin Harding. Meanwhile, Rory McIlroy gets a long-awaited win. It's a big one, and less than a month before the Masters.
All the experiences I've had over the last few weeks in terms of trying to win and not getting over the line definitely helped me today. You know, maybe if I hadn't have had those experiences, I wouldn't be sitting up here with this trophy. So, you know, I'm thankful and grateful for those experiences I've had this year. Yes, it would have been nice to maybe get another win, but it sort of made it all worth it.
We'll hear from McIlroy as well as from those at the top of the leaderboard in Kenya. Plus, there's also a look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, the Maybank Championship in Kuala Lumpur. I'm Dan Roebuck and I'm joined by former European Tour winner Richard Boxall, and down the line we have golf journalist Ben Coley from sportinglife.com. Boxy,
yes.
First and foremost, how are you?
I'm not bad. Well, I'm just reading that sort of your opener here about, you know, former European Tour winner. I had a dream, and it was only last night. It's got to be because I'd done this. I had dreamt I won the Czech Masters.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it obviously was a dream, but I could feel myself tapping it in, and I thought, well, that's nice. It's been quite a long time.
You see, a lot of people associate like you with Czechs and your fixation with Czechs.
Correct, absolutely right.
Is that part of it?
It is, and also what brought back was, you know, we could head on to Rory McIlroy about him winning the supposedly fifth major. I won the fifth major.
Of course,
the Italian Open.
Exactly, a Rolex Series event.
You put your hand up if you've won one.
Exactly.
Can't get it down. No. Hand, anyway.
Let's say hello to Ben as well. Ben, how are you? Always first up with the golf previews each and every week on sportinglife.com for the European Tour. It's been a tough season, I think, for those trying to predict these winners, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has for me anyway. But the last couple of months have been fairly slow, but we'll get back on the bike in time for the Masters, hopefully.
Rory McIlroy. We're going to start with Rory first and foremost, because I think a lot of pundits, a lot that follow golf, were slightly concerned about Rory. I'm not sure why, Boxy. We had this stat last week where he was in the final two ball nine occasions, didn't win. But yeah, he's now won for the 15th time on the PGA Tour.
And only the third one to do it. Can you believe that?
Well, before 30, under the age of 30, along with Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus. I mean, he's in fantastic company. Why were we worried?
Are you asking me or
yes,
are you asking Ben?
I'm asking you
me.
First.
We won't worry, because he had five top six finishes, is it, in his start so far this season. That's quite a good career there. And that's only about in the first sort of 3 months. I watched it last night with I won't mention the name because you're not really supposed to, but a nice rum, Diet Coke, obviously, that's how I stay so svelte, lots of ice, and I sat down there early doors and I started watching it and I thought, this is really good, and even when he doubled the fourth, I still thought, as he went on, I thought, this is going to be exciting. It was like the sort of old days of Tiger Woods. I expected McIlroy to win. Putting was great. Everything was perfect. He was hitting it miles. I mean, you'd actually like to be put. I'll ask this to Ben, if you don't mind. May I ask Ben a question? Ben, you wouldn't mind playing a round of golf from where Rory McIlroy hits his drives just to see what you could knock it round in, would you?
Oh, I really wouldn't. I'm a terrible golfer, so yeah, that would be fabulous.
Just to
have a go, you know, to have less than 200 yards in on a par four would be a good start.
Yeah, but to go back to your question, Dan, you know, what was everyone worrying about? It's ridiculous, really. You know, look at what he's won and where he is. He was just going through a bit of a quiet period. Why is he not winning? No, but he's finishing sixth and he's finishing third and he's finishing fifth. You can't physically win every week. It's impossible.
But what happens, Ben, is that, you know, we're obsessed, I think, with recency bias, and we see Rory getting into the final group. We expect him to win, and he doesn't, and then he doesn't again, and again, and again, and again. He's still playing fantastically well, but just not winning. We trot out the stats, we think there's an issue, and really, maybe there isn't.
Well, I guess there are two ways to look at it for me. I mean, for starters, I think it's perfectly fair to ask the question of a player of Rory McIlroy's calibre, of which there have been few in history. When he's shooting 74 alongside Tiger Woods at Eastlake and alongside Justin Thomas at Firestone, at 73 in the Masters alongside Patrick Reed, and not beating Graham Storm, with due respect to Graham, in the South African Open, losing to Hao Tong Li in Dubai, you know, I know it's really hard to win and it's easy for me to sit here and say he should be winning more than he has, But when you look at Bryson DeChambeau and Dustin Johnson and Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka and slightly further back, Spieth and Day, they've been dominant forces for a period of time where they've just taken all their opportunities, or at least most of them. And Rory stopped doing that for 3 years now. So I think it's fair to ask why that is, but it's also fair to expect that eventually he was going to figure out, because if you go back through his career, you know, he blew the Masters. People said, oh, you know, he's got some talent, this kid, but that might, you know, damage him for years. Well, it didn't. He won the very next major. And if you go back to 2014, when he was arguably at his absolute most dominant, people were worried that he couldn't score on Friday. He had this bizarre thing where he got to the Open Championship having shot 78 in his last two second rounds. And he answered the question with a 66. And that's what great players do. They answer the question. I do think this one took him longer than we all expected to answer. And that's why you have to keep asking it. But it's Rory McIlroy, you know, he's an all-time great, and therefore it's no surprise what he did yesterday.
Listen, I agree with you about it, but it is amazing what the 6 inches of grey matter can do between your ears. It's you know, you've got lots of time between shots, lots of time for thinking, and it does play some terrible, terrible games with you, especially when it comes to putting pressure on.
You know, I can't speak for how McIlroy really feels, and he certainly wouldn't admit to it, despite the fact he is kind of disarmingly honest. But I really thought yesterday was a big day for him, because the difference between arriving at Augusta with the win and arriving on another question mark could be absolutely massive. Let's say he does find himself in that final group again.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
More on McIlroy and his Players' Championship win a little later in the show. We're going to focus on the Magical Kenya Open presented by ABSA. This is just the 14th event, Ben, for Guido Migliozzi. Hugely impressive, a passionate guy on the golf course. He's won on the Alps Tour previously. Are we seeing these players who have just got wins, doesn't matter where they are in the world, coming onto the European Tour and just playing fearless golf, whereas those that maybe get a bit jaded and have been on tour for a long time and don't win? Is there a difference between those two players? Boxy was talking about the old grey matter. These guys just seem to come on and win. And winning on the Alps Tour, does that just give a huge tick in the right box for these guys who come on tour and play in just a handful of events, as Migliozzi has?
Yeah, I think it has to. I mean, I think it was mentioned in commentary yesterday that he'd not really got any scar tissue. Also, he hadn't got a great deal to lose. I know he had a lot to gain. You know, he's got a two-year exemption. But you look at his career, he won 3 times on the Alps Tour. He was prolific as a junior golfer in Italy. And all that has to count. We've seen it with Matt Wallace, I suppose, most famously over the last couple of years. And he also came through Q School. He was bogey-free on the final round at Q School back at the end of last year, when sort of around the cut mark, if you like. So clearly, he has got serious bottle. And when he came off and said that, I think he said, you know, pressure's like a drug. Some players, they say things that you're not convinced by. I was utterly convinced. And I really like the fact that, you know, under the gun, he had that shot. He seemed to tee it low and just squeeze a fade down the fairway. Just a textbook under pressure performance from a guy who's, what, 22 years old. I was really impressed.
Yeah, plus, you know, Dan was saying, Ben, wasn't he, that he's not played many tournaments. He's not played many tournaments on the European Tour, but the main secret is he's kept playing. You know, he's 22 and he's played competitively, which makes a massive difference. So, you know, he moves up to Kenya, like Ben was saying, he's not got a lot of scar tissue there. But they're playing competitive stuff, and winning is winning, and getting it past the line, you'll never forget it.
I mean, I was going to make the comparison, and I know sort of different age group, but when you look at what Justin Harding did, you know, last week, he's come out and nearly won again, and he's been a multiple winner on various different tours across the world. OK, not maybe the top tours, but, you know, once you've just got wins under your belt, I mean, Harding nearly came good again, didn't he, from off the pace?
He did, yeah, he did. I mean, he's had 7 wins. That actually wasn't for me. That was for Ben, wasn't it?
Doesn't matter. But listen, I'll throw that to you in a minute, Ben. Anyone can take it.
He's had 7 wins on the Sunshine Tour. And was it 2 in Asia as well, wasn't it? Do you know that?
Yeah, it
Justin
was.
Harding,
yeah,
wasn't it? Yeah, yeah.
He's really turned his career around at a later stage, you know.
I'll let you answer his question now, Ben. Go on.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, like you said at the top there, winning is winning. And I know Luis de Llago, it didn't quite happen for him, but he's won a couple of times on the Sunshine Tour lately as well. Gaganjeet Bhullar's got to that stage now where he's expecting to win events. And maybe Kyle Samudja and a couple of the other guys that were also in contention aren't quite there yet. But it's massive. I also think it was important for Migliozzi that he was... Yeah, obviously it was the Kenya Open the first time. The field wasn't the strongest we'll see of the year. And he was in the final group with Adrianus, who looks a fantastic talent. But, you know, Migliozzi probably feels this is someone from my era. He's as lacking in experience as I am. And it would have been different, perhaps, if he's going up against a high-caliber player who's done this and been there and done it loads of times before. So I think he spoke about how he sort of turned it into a match play scenario, and that helped him as well. But yeah, you have to give him massive credit for the way he did it.
Interesting what you say, Ben. There's no fear. You're playing amongst, you know, your contemporaries, your peers. You're not overwhelmed by one or two of maybe star names that might rock up. And in a reverse way, Boxy, if you've been out on tour for an awfully long time and you see these kids coming through and just playing supremely well, do you get intimidated by them a little bit?
No, I think what you admire is, you know, in my days, and we're going back 100 years, we're going back to the early 80s, you know, the most important thing, first of all, you started in April and you finished in September. Okay, you played only for 6 months. And your most important thing, unless you were an exempt player, i.e. somebody like Howard Clark, Brand Jr., somebody like that, if you weren't exempt, you had to get, the main option was to get your card. Okay, and that's what was in your mind. Must keep my playing rights, must keep my playing rights at the factory, must be able to check in every, you know, every Wednesday, every Thursday morning. And now it's not, the players don't think that so much. The players come out and they're just trying to, like they were in their amateur days, just trying to win. You know, which is what you did as an amateur. You didn't need to keep a card to play the amateur circuit. You had to get down to scratch and my day, and then you just played and played the British amateur, English amateur, that sort of stuff. But now it's more, they think, yes, let's get out and win.
What were the key moments, do you think, briefly, Ben, for the main protagonist yesterday? We got that bogey from Miliozzi, what was it, the ninth, and I think it was a poor effort from the Spaniard. He bogeyed the par five, was it 11 or 12? I can't remember now, but there was plenty with opportunities to win down the stretch yesterday.
Yeah, and that 12th hole, a two-shot swing, Migliozzi, you know, played it fairly straightforwardly, had a decent look at eagle, whereas Arnaud's got in a bit of trouble. That will have been a pivotal moment. Clearly, he was part of the clubhouse from there. But I think he referenced the drive on 15, I beg your pardon, one of the sort of more demanding drives, and he was really pleased with how he hit it. He realised he had to step up and hit a shot at that point. And having done that, you know, I think it gave him the confidence to go on and take it from there. I mean, who knows what would have happened had Harding not bogeyed the 13th or 14th. I think it was the 13th. You know, he was right there setting a challenging target at the time. But Migliozzi, to me, just had that sort of look about him that he could do what he needed to do. And I dare say, had Harding posted 16 under, maybe Migliozzi would have birdied the 17th and got one better, because he was just that impressive. And obviously hitting the flagstick on his approach to 18. We've seen that go wrong in the past, haven't we? But thankfully it nestled sort of 20 feet away and he was able to do what he needed to.
Ben, can I ask you a question? I know obviously you study the tour quite closely. Adrie Arnaus from Spain, he's... I don't know how much you've watched him, sorry, I should say, but he's very fancied from a lot of older players from Spain.
Yeah, he's one of those, I think, when you get that sort of whisper for people, don't you, that there's a player coming through who's just maybe a little bit ahead. And dare I say it, over the next 10 years, I would probably expect him to have a more successful career than Migliozzi. You know, he's almost in the top 100 already, and he got that win at the end of the Challenge Tour season. To me, he looks, I've not seen him in the flesh, but he just looks like he has a very modern, powerful game and a bit of a chip on his shoulders. So it's been a great start to life on the European Tour. He's basically sealed his card already, and onwards and upwards.
Yeah, he is a powerful lad. And I'll tell you another thing that gives it away. And Dan, you can have this for free. Next time you're watching on the TV, you think, oh, there's caddy changes there. You look who's caddying for him now. Phil Morby. Wobbly is his nickname. Now, I've known Wobbly for years, for 30-odd years. And there's like a sort of a top turntable of caddies of about sort of 12 to 14 that go around that always seem to get good bags. And if they don't quite get a good bag, one thing they do, Ben, is spot somebody that's pretty good and get on him quickly. And that's what Phil's done, isn't he?
I remember last year when Craig Connolly and Martin Kaymer parted ways. Obviously, Craig's now with Brandon Grace, but yeah. he had a little off couple of weeks and he was straight on the bag of Lucas Herbert. And it... Yeah, they know how to get those bags.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's incredible, really.
Do you know that Craig Connolly shouted at my good lady at the Madrid Masters a few years ago?
What did he say? What are you doing married to that?
No, he said, put the camera down!
Oh, was he Welsh? Sorry about that, Ben. He gets a bit carried away there.
So he's off the Christmas card list. And he's a friend of the show as well, Craig. Sorry about that. He has been on the show a few times. Anyway, social media reaction. This from Justin Rose, who says, congratulations at Guido Migliozzi on winning the Kenya Open on the European Tour, especially on St. Patrick's Day for Niall Official. More on that in just a sec. Adrian now says, congrats for the win. Enjoyed the fight. Now on to Malaysia. And Nahar answers, yes, Guido Migliozzi has won his first European Tour event. Couldn't be prouder of him and everyone. Modest Golf. Ben, I've got a note here from the producer. It says, ask Ben about Nahar because he tweeted him about his involvement in golf. You're going to have to tell us a story because I'm not sure about it myself.
Yeah, I waded into a world I wish I hadn't of Niall's fans, which is, you know...
Are you on their blacklist? You're not on their blacklist, are you?
I am you might enemy be. Of the fandom, I think one person put it, which is terrifying, isn't it? It sounds like I'm going to be a victim in Game of Thrones.
What is his involvement in golf? Because you've seen him about a little bit. You tell us more.
Yeah, I mean, look, seriously, my tweet was slightly sarcastic. I was trying to make the point that when Niall tweets about golf, he gets loads of his music fans just telling him they love him. And I just wonder how many of those people actually pay attention to the golf. It turns out some of them do, which is great. But clearly what he's done in golf, you know, setting up Modest Golf, investing in young players, specifically young players who, you know, need that guidance and a bit of experience that part of his team, I'm sure, can give. It's a really selfless thing to do. He's got a lot on his plate already in his career. Yeah, you can say he's got all the money in the world and all that. And you could call it self-indulgent if you were cynical, but I don't see it that way at all. I think he's got basically nothing to gain here except a bit of pride and involvement in the sport he clearly loves. So he's fabulous for golf. The more Niall Horans in this world, the better. He seems like a good egg, and golf will benefit massively from this, as is clear from the fact that I got at least 50 people telling me they've been following Guido Migliozzi's career closer than I had. So
now, here's a question I've got for Richard Boxall.
Yes, go on.
Because... In this world that we live in, there are some very famous people that kick around. And if you were on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and the millionaire question was, who is Niall Horan?
Yes.
Boxy, do you think you know who it is?
Niall Horan or Niall Horan?
Horan, Horan. Is it Horan, Ben, or Horan? It's Horan.
Oh, you ask the it's fans. It's Horan, I think.
Yeah. Horan. Okay, Horan.
Well, that would only go in one direction, wouldn't it?
Oh, there's no question about that. I can't believe it. I didn't think you knew that.
Hang on. I actually commentated on him when he was caddying for Rory at the par 3 at
the Masters. Yeah.
And he did shank it, and I couldn't resist it. I said, well, that was only going in one direction.
Great line. That's why you're still on Sky.
Isn't that, Ben, isn't that so nice when you can get somebody like that, when you sort of know what's coming your way?
Yeah, I fell into that one.
Very much teed
can
up.
You just hang on a minute, Dan, you're down just for a second. Ben, could you do me a favour on air now? Could you say to our producer, please keep that in?
Please keep that in.
Thank you very much.
Listen, of course, it was. Yeah, can you name a song, Boxy, for the bonus point?
For the bonus point?
Can you name One Direction? So go on, then. Go on.
Just lead to the break and I'll be right
back.
No,
sorry, go on. Go on.
Hang on a second.
Hang on, Ben, can you name a song? Ben's young. Ben can name a song.
I'd like to. I'm going to say no, even though I definitely can, because I don't want to lose face in the
One Direction
world I live in.
I know loads of One Direction.
I've heard my kids hum them and sing them. And
who else? Who else? Who else has he got in his stable?
he's really trying to fight back here, Ben, isn't he?
No, I'm not. I know what I'm beat. Which of the golfers does he look after? Do we know?
He's got Bob McIntyre, I think, the young Scottish lefty. A fair few others, but I think the thing that ties them together does seem to be youth. Leona Maguire, I think, as well. I think she's one of them. So,
Chef the Voice.
No,
she knows. The ladies' tour, isn't she? And so, how many has he got? Hang on, our presenter's fallen under the table.
I've been told to move on.
How many?
Mercifully, listen. Let's hear from Guido Migliozzi, who gave his reaction after winning the Magical Kenya Open, presented by ABSA.
Amazing feeling. I mean, it's incredible. First win on European Tour. Unbelievable feeling. I can't tell you very well how about me at the moment. I think the key this tournament has been calm and keep going shot by shot and stay patient.
And how was it, obviously, you and Adri getting on well yesterday and you're up against him again today. So how was it going up against Adri again?
Yesterday was incredible. We played so well and it was like a match play tournament. Today there was more pressure, and both of us played so-and-so, but he's a nice guy, he's a good player, and it's been great to play with him those 2 days.
And finally, just sum up, how does this change everything for you now after your first European Tour win?
Just keep playing like this and hope to get this sensation more and more. I love pressure and I can't wait to feel it again in the tournament.
Ben, I have got a song here from Niall Horan's group. Would you like to know what it is?
Please.
Well, it's what's sitting in front of me. It's called That's What Makes You Beautiful.
That's the one I've heard.
Yeah.
How does it go?
Yeah, That's What Makes You Beautiful. I can't remember quite how it goes. Can you, Ben? Can you start it off?
I'm afraid not. No. Sorry.
He mentioned there playing with Adrie. I mean, you guys mentioned it previously. If you've got a bit of a connection with your playing partner, it's got to help you, I guess.
Oh, if you're friendly with somebody, yeah, that does help. But then again, you know, it can go the other way. Derek Cooper and Cole Mason were really good friends of mine on the European Tour. Used to have great fun, you know, once the sun had gone down. And but then to play golf with, it was different because what you laugh and joke about at night, all of a sudden it's all gone quite serious. You know, I mean, Derek Cooper used to be a bit iffy with the short game. And I remember playing with him and he, you know, I'd have a little chip shot from around the green in the tournament and he, you could feel him standing behind you with his arms crossed, go, right, how are you going to play this one then? You know, and it, that kind of stuff can work against you. But I think in a nervy sort of situation, you know, a tense situation, it's better to have somebody who, not say you're massively matey with, but just a good friend.
If you're previewing an event, Ben, going into, say, the last round, so just, you know, Sunday morning you get your copy up, do you know who, you know, the leader is playing with and whether that would be a plus or a minus? If a youngster's playing with Tiger Woods, would that be a negative for you? Do you look at to the, you know, the pairings going into a final round?
It's definitely something to consider, yeah. I think the best recent example I can think of, I guess, would be Justin Thomas with Tiger Woods. I think they've played together 7 times since Tiger came back on the tour, and Justin has beaten him each of the 7 times. Over that round, and that's valuable info, because if you go back 5 or 6 years when Tiger had his sort of second part of his career, if you like, every time he played with Ricky Fowler, Ricky shot 78. So yeah, it's good to know that sort of thing. Obviously it would have been quite difficult with when you're looking at young players and there's perhaps not that much information available about them, but obviously on Saturday Guido said that playing with Adrie made him comfortable, so that was always in the favour of both of them going into the final round. Definitely.
Who, Boxy, was the most intimidating player that you teed it up with them?
Intimidating, I would...
Or difficult to play with for whatever reason.
Well, some of the... Bernard Langer was...
Or do you think you were intimidating to others?
I think they were all filling their trousers when they came to play with me, to be perfectly honest. Intimidate, I'd say Seve, because of who he was probably the most intimidating.
Well, Justin Harding couldn't quite make it back-to-back wins following his victory last week, but nevertheless, he was pleased with his performance in Kenya.
Look, it was another good week. Pretty pleased. I battled probably from hole one with club selection and the wind swirling around. So, I mean, to have come out and posted 15 under, I'm pleased.
Yeah, and exactly. Coming from Qatar and the win and to, you know, be in contention right to the wire here, you must be really, really satisfied.
No, it's been good. I've been playing solid golf, trying to minimise mistakes. I mean, I made a couple this week, which were strange, but, I mean, at the end of the day, you just got to try and make more birdies and bogeys. That's about it. And at the end of the day, I had a good week last week and I've had another one this week. So I'm sitting quite nicely first season on the European Tour.
And probably another step up the world rankings following this. So do you mind starting to think about the next month or so?
Look, I think I had to have a good finish, obviously, to counteract the boys that are playing for major points there, the players. So to have done that, it helps. I think probably still going to have a decent result come the match play in a couple of weeks' time. But I've at least given myself a decent shot at Augusta, which is nice.
Justin Harding, who, of course, won in Qatar, Ben, nearly went in again. And I guess it's the same thing that we were talking about earlier. Once you've got a win, you're hungry for another. And you do see those type of players go back to back. They've come on tour, they've won. And I thought it was interesting that he decided to play there. He's obviously trying to take advantage and get to Augusta. He suggested he might have to have a decent week at the match play, but he is playing well, isn't he, at the minute?
Yeah, and he's up to 48th in the world. So, yeah, he's very, very close to sealing that Masters debut. I suppose at a lower level, he's kind of doing what Francesco Molinari did, because Harding was this sort of sunshine tour regular who would win once every 2 or 3 years. And then now, I think he won 3 of his first 100-odd events, and now he's won 5 of his last 35. So, yeah, he's really flying now. And there's no reason he can't press on and get that place at Augusta. Obviously, there's a slight issue over burnout or whatever. But if he gets out of his group at the match play, that'll be job done. And it'll be well earned, because, you know, you've only got to go back 2 years and he was outside the top 700 and now he's in the top 50. It's a phenomenal rise.
You know, Ben, I think you can spot a good play. Did you watch much of Qatar or not?
Yeah, I watched plenty.
Well, yeah, I was out there doing the commentary, but he is one of those players, Justin Harden, that on the Saturday he shot 73, and you could see by the way he was playing, he was really, you know, he wasn't striking the ball bad. It just, nothing went his way, but he was one of those, it was one of those scrambling rounds of 73 where he could never ever have been any worse than that. Repaired it very well and was always have a good chance of going out and shooting a low one the next day. You know what I mean? He's that type.
Sure, yeah. I mean, he looks, you kind of look at him play and you think, what's he been doing? You know, like,
yeah, exactly.
Why hasn't he done this 10 years ago? But it reminds you, I suppose, that in golf, people progress at different rates. I think in this day and age, we get sort of used to people winning when they're 22, like Guido has, but there will be those who, you know, take 10 years to figure it out. Like a player like Patrick Rogers in the States, who everyone thought was going to just win and win,
yeah,
it's taken a little while longer, and that's part of the beauty of the sport, I guess.
Harding playing back-to-back weeks. One player that played 9 straight weeks, Robert McIntyre. How difficult is it to play 9 on the spin in this day and age, Boxer? You don't see it, do you, that often?
No, not that often, but if you can't, you know, you can virtually play every single week, but if you... Trust me, when you're young and you're like McIntyre and you want to collect as many points as you possibly can, get as many Euros up on the board. So I don't blame it. You know, playing 9 when you're young, you can do it. I mean, you know, I mean, I went for a stage. I think I played 20 or 22 on the trot. But I mean, in those days, we only played from April to September. So you were desperately trying to get as much money as you possibly could up to sort of be like a hamster and store it through the winter.
Ben, if I was looking for a likely winner, though, and someone had played 8 straight weeks and they played 3 different continents, out to Australia and back again and Middle East and then to Africa, I'd probably rule him out. But he shot a final round 63, didn't he, yesterday?
Yeah, I suppose that's one of the things I tend to look at, you know, player schedules. And Rory Sabatini, random example for you. He used to win after 6 or 7 weeks on the road, whereas most players... like Rory McIlroy prefers to, you know, 2 or 3 weeks and then he has a little break. So I guess when you're at that level, it's tempting to feel like you need to take every opportunity you can get. And for some it works, and for others they'll come back next year and say, oh, I learned a lesson last year, you know, I played too much golf. So we'll see if that's him, but clearly he had a little bit left in the locker yesterday.
He did, but you know what? You know, you listen on the radio, I'm sure you do as well, Ben. I'm just changing the subject, but footballers will be tired. Load of rubbish. When you were a kid, you wanted to play every single day, put a couple of jumpers down and run around all day long. And it's the same, I think it's the same in the golf. When you're young, Ben, you want to play as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, do you know, I've not heard that point about footballers made before. You make it well, it's interesting and enlightening. It's some good insight there. You know what we usually say, keep things in. Danny, make sure that...
Keep that one out.
Make sure
very
that
true,
one goes
though.
Out.
But don't you think, Ben...
Well, I guess you realise that all of these players who get to elite level, once upon a time, they will have played a lot more than they do now. And now they tell you, oh, I don't want to play 3 weeks in a row. Like, you know, players who didn't play Bay Hill because they didn't want to play Bay Hill players, you know. Well, you used to do it. So I tend to agree that they get a little bit sort of cosseted and maybe a little bit wrapped up in cotton wool, if you like. But... you know, the best players in the world, they can afford to do that. And if they think that having a couple of weeks off is going to make them more likely to win a major, then that's the right thing to do.
A couple of other points of order regarding the Kenya Open. Did you see, Ben, Simon Ngigi, the local player, get almost mobbed on the final hole of the last day? Shot a 69, chipped in, and then got jumped on by a marshal. It was a lovely moment, but I guess we wouldn't really want to see it in an Open Championship, for example.
No, I think you have to remember where we are. And, you know, for Kenyan golf, I think we saw on Sunday how popular the sport is in Kenya and how desperate they are for someone to go and win it. You know, I mean, now it's on the European Tour. That's going to be very, very difficult. They nearly won it with, I think, Jacob Akello maybe 20 years ago on the Challenge Tour. And a few others, Dismas Indiza and Greg Snow, have played well. But no one... can really take that next step. And that's how important it is for them. You saw that with the marshal sort of losing his mind for a second, forgetting what he was there to do. But I've no problem with that in an event like the Kenya Open. You know, it's just a different kettle of fish altogether. And what a brilliant moment for Simon Ngigi. He played really well. And to see it out, I think he finished around 20th. Just a fabulous week for him.
Yeah, he was tied 25th. He finished in the end. So that, you know, that was really good for Kenya. But having been out there and played in Kenya, that, you know, they're really keen, and the caddies, honestly, Ben, when we used to be out there, the caddies would bet amongst themselves, and sometimes you could get massive punch-ups in the caddy hut afterwards.
Well,
trust me.
Why?
Well, because I'd got ahead and won my 3-ball again. You know what I mean? That's why they used to get a bit upset. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I've actually been, and you know, some people might be bored of me telling this story, but I've been to Kenya twice on a golf tour. Actually, I've played maybe 15 golf courses in Kenya. Right. Never Karen, never Muthaiga, never the Windsor, which is a I have played the Windsor, which is a gorgeous course in Nairobi as well. But some of the more off the beaten track ones. And part of the joy of that was meeting all these caddies who just absolutely love golf. And so many of them, you give them a club and let them hit a shot. And, you know, you think these are phenomenal talents. And obviously they just don't have the infrastructure to take their games to the next level. And hopefully what the Kenya Open is doing, what the European Tour are doing in bringing that to the main tour, hopefully it's a small step in the direction of eventually getting world-class players from Kenya, because the passion for it is there. And I tell you, there's enough golf courses. You can, I think there are 50 odd in Kenya. So, you know, there is the framework to really take it. And hopefully from a small start, they can go and do that.
Yeah, some really good storylines coming out of Kenya, and really enjoy the action over the course of the 4 days. We saw on the European Tour player blog Ho Sung Choi with his background. I don't know if you saw this, Ben, but an amazing story for a player who only turned pro 29. He lost half of his thumb on a tuna cutting machine when he was working part-time away from high school. And he's got this extraordinary swing as well, hasn't he? I don't know if you're across this story at all, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, he's become internet famous, hasn't he, because of his follow-through, really. I think people who understand golf swings, and I'm not one of them, will tell you that through impact, he's pretty good. But it just he kind of exaggerates the follow-through. And I think you can probably be quite cynical and say that the more people have begun to see this on the internet, the more exaggerated it has become. But he's in his 40s. Why not take the opportunities that come your way? You know, he's been invited to play on the PGA Tour. He's been invited to play on the European Tour. This is because he's not because of his results, really. It's because he's become famous for the way he swings the ball. And he's a bit of a character. And, we need that, don't we?
I mean, definitely.
That's fine.
Yes, he's got where he's got because he looks like an octopus falling out of a tree, isn't it? That's basically what it is.
Would you copy his swing, Boxy?
No. No, but good Lord, no. But he is, you know, as it doesn't matter how. At the end of the day, it's that, you know, it's at the bottom of the swing. If the club ends in the right place, it'll go straight. And as you were saying, Ben, he's got it right.
He doesn't do it on every single shot, we have to suggest.
And he's won golf tournaments, you know. His internet fame doesn't get him to his world rankings, like 200. You know, that's not because of the internet. That's because he's won golf tournaments. You know, he won the World Open in Japan late last year. That's a good event with good players, and he won it. So we shouldn't underestimate him. I know Rory had this point about whether you give sponsor invites to players like that rather than someone further down the ladder, but I kind of think that's what sponsor invites are for, you know, to generate more interest than perhaps there would have been.
Good point, yeah, good point.
Let's get the top 10, shall we, from the Magical Kenya Open, presented by ABSA.
We will. Tied ninth was Christian Bezuidenhout, Josh Geary and Anton Carlson, who, by the way, is a very good player, Anton Carlson. Where are we? Eighth was Liam Johnston. Kelly Somoya and Roman Langasque were in a tie for six. Fifth was Gagenji Bula. Justin Harding, winner in Qatar, another good finish, tied second alongside Louis De Jager and Adri Arnaus. And your winner was Guido Mialozzi. I hope that's the right way of pronouncing it.
That's what I've been saying.
I think it is. Mialozzi. Anyway, 16 under, one by one.
Excellent stuff. Louis De Jager, did you see him play shots
Two left-handed shots in the same round, most unusual, yeah, and played it with the back of the club rather than turning the toe round.
And you could say you can turn the toe round.
You turn a right-handed club over. You know.
So why did he leave it the wrong way around then? What was the point of that?
I don't know. He maybe felt more secure. You've got less hitting space if you turn the toe down. Have you ever tried playing left-handed?
No.
I'm pathetic at trying. I can't swing it left-handed. It's absolutely hopeless. Useless. Have you ever tried it, Ben?
I don't know. I have enough troubles right-handed, to be honest with you. So
yeah.
But I tell you what, though, I did not know that you were allowed to hit it with the back of the club. I was watching it thinking someone's going to, you know, penalise him here. I thought you had to use the face of the club, but obviously not.
No, you know, you can use the back of the club. It's amazing. We've got a seat in between us here, Ben, with my coat on it and a microphone hanging down. Every time I ask you a question, I look across to this seat. It's unbelievable.
It's like you're with us.
It's like you're with us,
Last week's predictions, first of all, a reminder of the format. We get two picks each. One has to be outside the top 50 in the final 2018 Race 2 Dubai standings. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, a minus 5 for a missed cut. Now, I went for Justin Harding, who was second, of course, last
week.
Very
good.
Yeah, it was excellent. I don't know where I pulled him from. 10 points for me. And also Jeff Winter, who was 68th. Did you see his first two rounds, Ben? This is great if you're
80,
having a punt.
80, 66
on.
Or whatever.
Unbelievable, then, yeah.
I mean, he will regret not having just down tools on Friday, right? Because I think Thomas Bjorn said he had to buy another flight and he ended up out of pocket.
Unbelievable. Anyway, so I don't get any points for Jeff. But Robert Lee went for Christian Bezuidenhout, who was ninth, 5 points, and Eric Van Rooyen, who maybe surprisingly missed the cut. And Matt Cooper, who was alongside, as Shubhankar Sharma, who missed the cut, minus five. And Romain Langasque, who was six. Yes, boxing?
No, you went very French there.
Yes,
right,
I did. Well, he is French.
Romain. Is it Romain or Romain?
Romain.
Anyway,
it was tied 6, 5 points. So presenters stay on 105, co-presenters up to 35, and the guests, that's your lot, Ben, who are meant to be the experts with this. You lot are on 15, so there's a bit of pressure on you.
So presenters, co-presenters.
Yeah, that's you, your co-presenter.
Oh, am I co-presenter?
Yeah.
I thought I was just...
What, Richard Boxall, Esquire?
DB, General Dog's Body, that's brought along every now.
Do you know what? You're never a General Dog's Body. You're always the star.
All right, 35. So, all right, so I'm
Rob,
up to 35.
Rob, incidentally, was playing... Well, Rob was playing for presenter last week. Who was I playing for last week, Danny, producer? I was playing for co-pres.
Right.
So it's like I play for two teams. It's like I've got a Sunday league side and a Saturday league side as well. Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game. Stephen Swan leads the global leaderboard. Martin McGiven got the most points for the event in Kenya. With Guido Migliozzi as his captain, how on earth do you pick out the Italian as your captain?
No, I don't know.
He's cheated. No, he hasn't. If you want to get involved, you can do by heading to europeantour.com and registering your team. Now, there's only one right answer here, Ben. Do you play the Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game?
Of course I do.
That's the right answer. How's your team coming along?
Not very well.
Okay.
Is the wrong answer.
No, I don't mind that.
Fantasy golf is something that I've yet to crack it. I play all kinds of different games. I even run one myself, and I'm hopeless. But we'll figure it out eventually. This is the week. I'm going to find you a winner, because clearly the guests need a favour here.
Richard, top 10 in the Race 2 Dubai.
Top 10 are, 10th spot is Matt Wallace, Joost Luiten, good comeback from injury, 9th. 8th is David Lipsky, Louis Oosthuizen is 7th, Bryson DeChambeau is 6th, Kurt Kitayama is 5th, 4th is Richard Sterney, Ian Poulter is 3rd, Justin Harding is right up to 2nd now. But Shane Lowry, after his Rolex win in Abu Dhabi, he is still top of the table.
Meanwhile, Minwoo Lee has been voted Hilton Golfer of the Month for February after putting in 2 top 5 finishes and moving inside the top 30 in the Race to Dubai rankings. Let's move on to the tremendous victory for Rory McIlroy at the Players' Championship at Sawgrass, Florida. We trailed it at the top of the show after those near misses. Rory finally getting the job done for the first time since securing success at Bay Hill in 2018. And he's obviously moving in the right direction, heading to the first major of the year.
You're not Rory you're talking about, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, I never thought he was never heading in the right direction anyway. People keep going on about him not performing. It really amazes me, really. I mean, you know, he's not robotic. And, you know, he's what is it, 5 top 6 finishes so far this season. It's been brilliant. It just all came together. I think the greens were cool. I think the greens are very good for the Europeans. Sawgrass. I think they were a beautiful pace. They looked great, and obviously the course was a lot greener being played in March rather than May. But McIlroy, it all came together. He started knocking his wedge play close. Even when he knocked it in the water at the fourth, I still, you know, double bogeyed it. As I said, I was having a nice glass of rum and Coke, and I was sort of watching what was going on. I was thinking this is going to be quite exciting, because it was a bit like the days of old of Tiger Woods. You know, he's fallen behind. Let's see if he can fight back. And I always thought McIlroy could fight back, and did. He's some player. He'll have to go down as whatever happens. He'd have to go down as one of the all-time greats, I would say.
I must admit, when he did make that double bogey early on, because we've seen him fall away, Ben, in recent events on the PGA Tour, I sort of feared the worst. I mean, he doesn't get down about his game on the course, or it doesn't seem that way, does it?
He doesn't seem to, no. And I guess he was aided by the fact everybody started badly. I think John Rahm was 3 over through 4, and Tommy Fleetwood was struggling a little bit, and that takes the pressure off. If John Rahm starts birdie-birdie and Rory makes that double at form, you know, all of a sudden it's a really long way back. But it was a great performance. I think it was his 10th appearance in the Players, and I do think it was significant that he's finally won it, and he's never looked like winning it before. He's finished 6th, but never really contended. I think the move from May to March really helped him. As Richard said, the slower greens, but also the fact that he could fly his driver 330 yards and know it's not going to go too far, you know, pretty much pitch and stop. And I think that was a big bonus in his favour. It helped Dustin Johnson as well, but take nothing away from him. I think the shots he hit down 18 were Rory McIlroy back to his absolute best.
Ben, you mentioned Rahm starting badly. I can't remember the stat about leaders in the Players' Championship after 54 holes, but they've got an awful record, haven't they?
Yeah, the scoring average is something like 75 for the last 10 years, which is incredible. And bear in mind, you know, three of those players have won. I think Jason Day, Martin Kaymer and Webb Simpson all led after every single round and basically won fairly easily. But clearly, I suppose in those examples, they didn't need to go out and shoot a good number. But there are many players here who struggle with the lead, many world-class players. It's that sort of course, isn't it? I guess there can be no more fearsome a course or very few more fearsome courses where playing with the lead, you know that one shot can cost you three shots. And that's a very difficult place for a front runner to be. Even so, Rahm will have expected more from himself. And I think obviously the turning point for him was that decision to go for the green on the 11th, which... Oh, it looked crazy at the time.
That was amazing, wasn't it?
Especially when he's got a very experienced caddy who told him no. And I suppose it underlines that the player always has the final say. And I guess, you know, if he hit a brilliant shot, he might have had a 50-foot eagle putt. He could have hit two average shots and had a 30-foot birdie putt. And I think sometimes you've got to realise that, you know, you've got another seven holes to go after this, including an easy par five, the 16th, where Rory had 20 feet for eagle. You know, there were chances to come.
Yeah,
he lost the tournament there.
Yeah, he did. But I also think if you've got somebody down on the ground, like I was listening last night, and my good old mate Wayne Riley was down there, who's won many, many tournaments, watched lots of golf, and even he said that was absolute madness. Never seen anything.
Is that just
stupid.
The way John Rahm plays, though? Is that just that's
well, yeah,
his
he just thought he could pull the shot off. But you know, you listen to Ewan as well. He was downwind. You can't get as much movement on a ball downwind. You into the wind, yes, you can. But he was aiming it 30 yards right and snap hooking it over the water and over a bunker from about 217 yards or something like that. When I looked at it, I watched him. I thought he was just laying up down the right here. And then his eyes kept moving to the left. I thought, oh, no, maybe he's going to try and give us a good old Captain
Cook. Is this
Cook.
Just experiences, you know, in a few years' time, we will not see him take on those shot boxes? Or do you think he's the type of player that's always going to be
take
that?
I think greed is a terrible thing, and it's just one of those things. You know, I think he sees the shot and thinks I can pull it off and goes for it. You know, if he had to make a five down there to keep his card, I know exactly what he would have done. And if he wasn't down to his last 48 million, I know exactly what he would have done. So, you know, there's all that does come into
the equation. But these players at that level, Ben, I mean, that's they take on shots like that, don't they?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I will always remember Phil Mickelson's former caddy, Jim Bones Mackay. He was asked once, do you think Phil Mickelson's lost tournaments? You know, he would have won more tournaments had he just been a little bit less aggressive. And he said, absolutely not. He would have won fewer tournaments because that's what made him... That's, you know, the shot from the pine straw or Augusta. If that goes in the water, we might say, well, why didn't he just lay up? He's in the lead, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, the day before, Rory hit it through the 16th, didn't he, into the water, going for a sort of low chasey shot. And to an extent, I think that is what makes these players great. However, there is always a line, isn't there? And if everybody watching, ex-players, one of the most experienced caddies on the circuit, every commentator there was is saying, what is he thinking? Then he's made a mistake. But he'll learn from it. And, you know, when John Rahm blew out in the lead of the World Golf Championship in Mexico last year, and what did he do? He went and won soon after. And I think we'll see that. It's just a learning curve. He will figure it out. And I dare say next time he leads with seven or eight holes to go on a course like that or an event like that, he'll probably go and win.
Yeah, he'll be in the winner's enclosure soon enough. The crisis has moved away from Rory McIlroy, and I'm going to put it firmly on Tommy Fleetwood because of this recency bias. And he seems to get himself in a lot of good positions, certainly stateside recently, boxy, but not winning.
No, but isn't it nice to see the Europeans doing well? You know, four of them in the top eight. I mean, the Americans have won, what, six now on the European Tour this year?
Yeah.
Six Americans have won, which is, you know... But and the other great thing was, of those four Europeans, three were from England. Now, it's a long, long time since you get three in the top eight at the Players' Championship.
You've just stonewalled my Fleetwood question. He keeps leading but not winning, Ben.
Yeah, I think if you were to have a criticism of Tommy Fleetwood, who, full disclosure, is one of my favourite players in the sport, you know, he's not won when he's had the opportunities, perhaps, as often as a truly elite player. But that's okay because he's had to rebuild his game, and I think he's still improving again. And look, I didn't think he played well at all yesterday, and I think I'm sort of more forgiving of a player who just from the very first tee shot doesn't look like they're on it than a player who plays really well and then gets to the 16th and all of a sudden can't hit a fairway. Obviously, he eagled the shot he hit into 16 to 3 feet was just fabulous, and then he went for the flag on 17 because he needed another birdie. So I don't know. I take a generally sympathetic view, but that's possibly coloured by the fact that I really like him. And I think he's got a fabulous attitude as well, so don't be surprised if he just brushes that off and goes really well in the match play, something like that.
Well, Rory brushed off those recent disappointments to secure victory. Let's hear what he had to say about the influence of Brad Faxon on his putting.
Brad has been a massive help. We got together about a year ago, just before Bay Hill. You know, most of Brad and I's work is done away from the golf course, away from the putting green. It's catching up for a coffee, it's chatting. It's, you know, he's a very smart individual and has got a lot of experience in the game and has played at obviously a very high level. So just to chat to him about certain things and how he felt on the course, and especially how he felt over putts where there might have been a bit of pressure or, you know, any of that. That's been a big help. But I think everyone, yeah, we're singling out Brad because my putting has definitely improved over the 12 months. But everyone on my team, my caddy Harry, my manager Sean, my coach Michael, my wife Erica, you know, everyone plays their part in me getting to this point.
Rory McIlroy talking about putting with Brad Faxon, just looking at his strokes gained putting stats from yesterday, because I love these. I don't know if Ben does that. I suspect he might do. Not great on round four. No. Minus figure. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Is it mental? He talks about, you know, just having a chat with Brad rather than getting on the putting.
Yes,
the
it is mental. It is mental. You know, I mean, I there's not one way to putt. All you've got to do is get the club face in square. In other words, or you've got to read the right... Every putt's straight, so you've got to get it on the right line to start with. OK, but at the end of it, you can squiggle it all over the place behind. It doesn't make any difference. It's got to come in square to the line you intend.
Is it still a bit of a question mark, the putting, even though he won yesterday? Ben, is that the thing that is holding him back? Because we said at the top of the show, he drives it so well, he puts himself in such good position, tee to green, every single time he plays.
Yeah, I suppose the players was a great demonstration of all Rory needs to do to win golf tournaments, because he led tee to green, strokes gained, 13 point something strokes on the field, and he ranked 45th rather in putting. That's fine. If he ranks 45th in putting every week, he'll win four times a year. The trouble is ranking 150th in putting. And the question mark, therefore, would be what happens at Augusta, where obviously the greens are at just a different level in terms of speed. Can he make the six-footers to save bogey even, you know, and just keep those big numbers off the scorecard? Take the fourth yesterday where he double bogeyed it. That could have been a triple at Augusta because he's two putted down the hill from 30 feet, but the green was slow. But Augusta, you can put that off the green. So that's the big thing he still has to prove, that he can go and do it on the fastest greens rather than the slowest that we'll perhaps see all year. So, but ultimately, does he need to putt well to win? No, he just needs to not putt really badly.
Well, he grounded out yesterday, and McIlroy says he has not just been improving his game.
Having a focus over the last 6 or 7 months on my attitude, especially my attitude to golf, and not letting golf define who I am as a person, trying to keep the two things very separate, because one thing that I used to do in the past is I'd let what I shot that day influence who I was or my mood or my, and to try and keep those two things very separate is something I've worked hard on, because who I am as a person isn't who I am as a golfer. It took me a while to get to that point where I realized who those two people were. And I think that's been the big difference between the highs and lows of the last few years and the more consistent play. Even over the last 12 months, you know, I've had two wins in the last 12 months, but even the play in between that has been pretty good. Top fives, top tens, you know, giving myself a chance most weeks.
How interesting was that? I mean, that is complete and utter honesty for you there from Rory McIlroy. And to say, I've never heard anybody say this before, which is amazing, really, but to say, he said, how I play can't compartmentalize. What's the word I'm looking for?
Compartmentalize.
Put it in a compartment. How he is on the golf course is not how he is as a person himself. To actually do that, when I heard him say that, and I thought that is really hard to do, because how many people take that last hole, that last putt, that last round? How many people take that to dinner at night? I'll tell you what, 99.9% of people do.
It applies to everybody, doesn't it? I don't think it's just professional sport.
No, it's
you know, people who can leave the job at, you know, if you're a doctor or a surgeon, you need to be able to leave that when you clock off for the day, and it's going to make you better at your job and better when you're not at your job, a better husband, a better whatever it may be. So the fact that Rory's owning that and acknowledging it, I mean, sorry for sounding like I'm a pop psychologist here, but that has to be good for his life on and off the course, because I think it's so hard for a professional athlete of that level to maintain a work-life balance. Tiger Woods always struggled. He failed at it, let's face it, for the first part of his career. And Rory gets it. He knows that the most important thing for him is not his golf, it's his wife and et cetera, you know, and that's great. And that's only going to help him extend, prolong his career and win more tournaments.
Boxy, is your attitude right? Do you know, when you clock off, you know, when you got it right on and off the course, so to speak, on and off the mic?
Trust me, when I clock off, I clock off. I can assure you that.
Really?
But it does go to show...
Attitude, Boxy.
You know, psychology side of it works massively. You know, it's...
You see, this
be
is,
careful what you wish
you know
for.
What?
You might just get it.
You see, you're giving it all the big one about psychology. And then when myself and Ben were talking strokes gained, you're like, oh, not all this again.
Well, it's not real, is it?
Ben, every single week when I'm honoured to present this show, I talk about strokes gained and all of these ex-players. Ah, load of rubbish. Thoughts?
I'm a big advocate.
Yeah,
I mean,
you see.
The more information you have... Well, look, Rory works with the 15th Club who powered the Ryder Cup victory in September. Of course, he should take that seriously. I also, let me be clear, like, I firmly believe in the things you can't measure, in the attitude and, you know, the idea that, say, Francesco Molinari playing well might have an influence on Tommy Fleetwood because they're so close and things like that. All the things you can't
the
put
intangibles.
A figure on. Yeah, but if you've got a figure, you might as well at least look at it.
Listen, Ben, I'm going to tell you something psychological-wise, which is going a little bit deep now. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready,
and you've probably heard it. I heard it many, many years ago. It says, whatever ails or bothers you, it's not the thing itself. It's the importance you attach to it. And you have the power to change that at any given time.
Crikey.
Yeah, I know.
That's deep.
Joey Barton or something.
Pass me that tissue. Yeah. That was from the Reading right back.
You mentioned briefly the Greens at Augusta. Ben and Boxy, I'll put it to you both. I mean, would you be parting with hard currency to back Rory McIlroy for the Masters? What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts always are about Augusta. It's take the pins out of play, take the flag sticks out of play, play for the safe parts of the Greens. If you take flags on and miss it, you can end up taking 3, 4, 5 from the wrong place. So, yes, you have to shape the ball a little bit around there for sure, but safe parts of the green.
Has he inched up your shortlist or long list for the Masters, Rory, Ben?
I don't know about that. I mean, I would say that categorically, as we talk now, he is the most likely winner of the Masters. But I think the difference between now and, say, 2014, when he won the Open, then he won at Firestone, then he won again the PGA Championship, where it just looked unstoppable, the difference now is the competition has elevated massively. And obviously, right now, it's just happened. We're talking about Rory. But Dustin Johnson's won twice this year, and he's off his best-ever player's finish. Brooks Koepka won't be far away. And, you know, three majors he's won in his last six. And Justin Thomas, for me, is probably the most complete package when he's on song. And I don't even write off Jordan Spieth just yet. So the competition is serious, and therefore he has to turn up and play well. And if he does that, he's the man to beat.
Jim Furyk, great performance from a player that's nearly on the seniors tour, second at the Players Championship. Boxer, your thoughts on
well, he was fortunate.
Jim's performance?
Where is he? His 23rd performance, I think it was. He wasn't in it last Sunday morning. You know, he finished ninth in the Honda, wasn't it, to get into that. He'd be happy that happened. You know, he got trounced at the Ryder Cup, didn't he? So something like that. Well, he would have been looking for a victory, but 48 years of age. I think he's going to pick up a few dollars on the seniors.
We mentioned Eddie Pepperell in dispatches. We can hear from Eddie next, who finished two behind McIlroy, tied third after a 66.
To be honest, I had a few ups out there. I didn't even have the downs to deal with because I hold a couple, which I wasn't surprised with. I mean, the bunker shot I hit on 14 and the pitch I hold on 15 were... I mean, no matter who hits them at any stage of a golf tournament, they're great short game shots. So they just gave me a kind of a sense of huge confidence, actually. I've kind of felt invincible, really, that last bit, only around the greens, let me tell you. It was a lot of fun. Obviously, culminating in the 17th was special.
Eddie Pepperell talking about his performance, a player, Ben, still getting used, I guess, to playing on PGA, in PGA Tour events, but... you know, throws cautions to the wind, didn't really expect anything on that final day and has shot up the leaderboard. We've seen it happen previously with Eddie.
Yeah, it was fabulous. And yeah, something about Sundays in big tournaments, you know, played with Justin Rose yesterday. It was it Phil Mickelson at the Open last summer? And it's brought out the best in him. I think, you know, perhaps not having expectation helped a little bit. But it was a brilliant performance. And the putter warmed up. I'm a big fan of Eddie. I'm sure pretty much everybody is. But the one thing he's still looking for, I think, is consistency. And performances like this will help the confidence and then therefore hopefully help him string them together and start, you know, contending for events like this on a regular basis. But two wins in the last 18 months, or less than that, in the last 13 months, there's no reason why he can't keep climbing the world rankings.
Speaking of the world rankings, we need the latest top 10, Richard.
OK, here they come. John Rahm is in 10th, 9th is Ricky Fowler. Xander Schauffele is in 8th, followed by Francesco Molinari in 7th. 6th is Rory McIlroy. Bryson DeChambeau is 5th. 4th is Justin Thomas. Brooks Koepka is 3rd. The Englishman, Justin Rose, is 2nd, but it's Dustin Johnson who still leads the way.
On to this week's event on the European Tour next, and the tour moves from Africa to Asia for the Maybank Championship. We are at Sujana Golf and Country Club in Kuala Lumpur. Par 72, 7,135 yards. The course box is dubbed the Cobra. Have you been to Sujana?
I have, yes, many, many years ago, coming towards the end of my playing career, sort of 21 years ago. Too hot and steamy for me. Not very good in countries like that. Didn't really want to go out and play in those sort of places because of being the wrong shape. The sweat used to drip down and, you know, I found it very uncomfortable. But I had a hole in one. Phil Morby, actually, who was caddying for Adrie Arnoux, was caddying for me. And I holed in one by shanking a 6-iron up a slope, I think, on one of the holes, and it ran all the way down and went into the hole.
Shubhanka Sharma was the winner in 2018, Ben. We've got quite a lot of sort of course form and country form to go on if we're trying to predict the winner. It's become part of the European Tour over the last generation, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, Sharma was fabulous, wasn't he? That Sunday, 10-under par final round last year, when he was just everything was going right in his sort of burgeoning career. But yeah, they've played Sujana the last couple of years, but even if you go further back, all those Malaysian Opens, they're also in Kuala Lumpur, at Kuala Lumpur Golf Club, and you've got the CIMB Classic there on the PGA Tour as well now. So, there's a lot of these guys are used to heading out to Asia, and I know it's a bit of a fragmented start to the European Tour season, but there's a big prize fund here and a decent field as well.
Have you been out there, Ben, or not?
No, I haven't. No. I play golf at altitude when it's hot and sticky, yeah. But nothing like Malaysia, I don't think.
I don't know. What sort of shape are you? Are you a highly tuned athlete, or are you sort of... What are you?
I'm running a marathon in October, so I'm supposed to be. Let me give you an insight. Yeah. I'm about 3 miles on the journey to 26. So, no, I'm a sort of... You
but
know,
you can see
average.
Your belt buckle, can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, unlike me, I iron my T-shirts on a wok, you see. So it's a little bit different. So, you know, those going out to Sales Union was really not a good spot for me. Presenter can't talk anymore. That's strange, isn't it?
Let's talk about one or two of the runners, shall we, after that. Thanks, Boxy.
Pleasure.
Thomas Peters, he's playing. I keep singling out players who can't seem to win. Thomas Peters has some terrific rounds, or has done this year, but again, he's not, you know, the same sort of form he was a few years ago, in terms of winning at least.
Well, I think his last win was Denmark 2016, yeah. Which is absolutely amazing. Is it 3 or 4 wins he's had on the European Tour?
I think it's 3.
It is 3. Yeah. Obviously, he won the World Cup with Thomas Dietrich back in November.
He did.
But solo,
we don't count
that. It's 2016.
We don't count that one. Only Barclays Bank count that, but we don't count that one, I'm afraid. What was I going to say? You look at the way he swings. He's the same as Thomas Dietrich. You know, he's both swing the club absolutely fantastic. Dietrich hasn't won one yet, but he will win. He'll win a fair few before he's finished. But you look at Peters, you look at the way he swings the club, you think, how does that ball ever, ever go offline? Because I'm not a great one for swinging. I can't teach people. It's just one of those things you either can or you can't. But you look at his swing and you think, well, how's that ever, ever offline? Yes, he's going to win lots of tournaments. Yes, he's going to play in more Ryder Cups. But I am surprised that he hasn't picked up a win. It's coming up to 3 years, it will be this August, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be well fancied. We've got a few old stages, if I can call them that, the likes of Ernie Els and Padraig Harrington, Boxy and Miguel Angel Jimenez, who's had success in that part of the world previously. These are players that, you know, we keep seeing pop up on leaderboards over the last year. I mean, Harrington's gone close to winning again. Els in South Africa, turn of the year, you know, was up on leaderboards. Can we see any of that trio rolling back the years?
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
Oh, thanks for that. I'm just talking them up a little bit there. And you've absolutely knocked me out of the park.
And I'll tell you why I'm going to, Sean.
Go on.
Because they're all nearly 50.
So am I.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, can we see you up there anymore? Probably not. You know, JD, you won't see him up there anymore. I mean, he might feature, but I doubt they wouldn't. They get to the end, they're just these players, you know, Els, brilliant players, Els, JD, Harrington, Bjorn, they're getting to the end. What they want to do is keep playing up until they're 50 and then get on to the wheelbarrow tournament where you turn up with a wheelbarrow and throw all the cash in and off you go.
I've got a list of players here in the field that have been European Tour winners, the likes of Chris Wood and Bernd Wiesberger. Bernd, as well as had injury issues here, Bennon, what are your thoughts on those two?
Yeah, I think two players who very, very nearly got into that next category. Obviously, Chris Wood's played Ryder Cup and he's won the BMW PGA, and he nearly won an Open. So he's a fabulous player, but obviously injuries have held him back and he's missed a couple of cuts since returning from injury this year. So he's a difficult one to assess. As for Wiesberger, you know, he's had a dozen starts now since coming back from his own injury, something like that anyway. And before his injury, 25th in the Masters or 24th in the Masters. So that's what he can do. You're just waiting to see that his game comes back together. He's down to like 281st in the world, I think. I mean, he's been as high as 25th, something like that. So, and Malaysia's good for him. He should have won the Malaysian Open a few years ago. So it's just hard to know where we stand with him, and you're looking for a little bit more.
Obviously, by the time this podcast comes out, I hope that your European Tour preview for sportinglife.com is already up online. Otherwise, we are stealing your editor's thunder, but we've got to get some selections. You can go different to your website, but it might look a little bit odd. Boxy and Ben, we need some picks then. Once again, one player has to be outside of the top 50 from the Race to Dubai from 2018. Who wants to go first? Come on, Mr. Boxy.
Well, I'll go first with my pick, yeah. Jorge Campillo.
Because
with him until he does win.
Yeah. Is he just a non-winner, though? He's just a non-winner.
No,
sorry, Jorge.
I'll tell you where I think he'll win. Go on. I think he'll be third, fourth, fifth, last group, shoot 63 or something. He'll get his first win that way.
Okay.
Is my view. And the other one I was going to go to, which you're not going to let me, was... Hang on, you can grab this pen off me. Adrian Otegi I was going to go
Why can't you go?
Because Otegi finished...
But Di Campillo?
23rd.
Di Campillo?
Last year.
Yeah, Di Campillo finished in the top 50?
26.
Oh, well, you can't have those two.
Can't have two. No, that's what I'm saying.
Every single week, and this has been the rules for about 3 years, we say one outside of the top 50.
Yeah.
It's not difficult. While you have a think about that, get on to Ben. What are your thoughts?
So, given the desperate plight of your guests on this show, I'm going to be fairly straightforward with this.
Okay.
My first one is Ryan Fox, who was well inside the top 50 on the Race to Dubai last year. When he finished third in this event last year, it was his best finish on the European Tour at the time. He obviously won in Perth a few weeks ago. That was part of a seven-week stretch of golf, and he's had a bit of a break. He's had 3 weeks off, so he should be ready to go again. And although this is quite a tight, fiddly little course, Fox has shown that there's a lot more to his game than just hitting the ball a long, long way. And for my second one, I'm going to play it ultra safe. This guy finished 58th on the Race to Dubai last year.
Oh, shrewd.
And it's Aaron Rye. You could have Loughton, actually. He's 55th. But anyway, I'm going to go with Aaron Rye.
I think Loughton's playing there.
Yeah, Loughton is playing.
Is he? Don't think he is.
I don't know. I checked the entries this morning and I don't remember seeing him, but I'm not picking him anyway. I'm going with Aaron Rye. I think it will have been a real stretch for Rye to miss Kenya last week because he won there in 2018 on the Challenge Tour and his mother's Kenyan. He really won't have wanted to miss that, but I think it tells you that now he's a European Tour winner. He needs to start picking and choosing the bigger prize funds and the better events for him. And I think this is a really good golf course for someone like Aaron Rye. His form is very similar to Shubhankar Sharma. Like, you look at the golf courses, they play well. Hong Kong, Joburg, the courses where you don't need to hit it miles, but you do need to hit the fairway. I think he'll go really, really well, despite the fact he missed the cut in Qatar.
Okay, now my first pick was Jorge Campillo. I'm going to pick one that was very close to the top 50. I'm going to go for Chris Paisley. Like his style, good player, highly tuned athlete, fit as a fiddle. He can see his belt buckle, and he'll be good in conditions like this.
See, I've not actually checked whether my two were inside or outside the top 50 from last
year. Okay, well, go on then. I can give you
one
from outside.
Gaganjit Bula.
Yeah, it will be outside.
You would
the
have
top
thought
50,
so, wouldn't
I
you? Fifth in Kenya, top 30 last two starts in Malaysia, and my other player, Mike Lorenzo Vera, who probably should have won in Qatar.
Mike Lorenzo Vera is good.
Second in Qatar.
Was both outside the top 50.
Yeah, see, they're both. So I get double points next week.
Should do.
Seventh in Malaysia a few years ago. So those are my two. That is your lot for now. We will have a full review of matters in Kuala Lumpur next week. Plus, we'll look ahead to the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. But for now, from Ben Coley.
Thanks, gents. Been a pleasure.
And from Richard Boxall.
Bye.
And from myself, Dan Roebuck. It is goodbye. Have a great week. We'll speak soon.